Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, a not-for-profit cooperative that contracts with over 39,000 healthcare providers on its employers' behalf to help them access healthcare. The-Alliance.org.
Support for WPR comes from Lawrence University in Appleton, home to 1,500 undergraduate students from nearly every state and more than 50 countries. Dedicated to an engaging global education. Lawrence.edu.
Well, the Winter Olympics are a lot of fun to watch. There's many great athletes there, obviously, at the top of their sport, and that makes a serious injury even more heartbreaking, and we've seen a few of them this year at the Olympics. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Of course, physical therapists play an important role in helping athletes avoid injury and then recover from them when they happen anyway. And Lori Tyne Brody, one of our guests today, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have you back, Lori.
It's good to be here. Kind of wished I had a dog sled to get here, though.
Yeah, just things are a little bit snowy out there.
Yeah.
Bill Boisenall, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic. And Bill, always great to see you.
Good to be back. Thank you. I felt like I could have used skis coming over
this morning. Oh, yeah. Or snowshoes.
Yeah, that,
a little bit more stability.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, we saw a lot of skis over the weekend. If you were watching the Olympics at all, there was a lot of skiing going on, and there were some injuries. I'm wondering about the role that physical therapists play in sort of getting athletes ready for this intense competition like the Olympics.
Yeah, it's in different phases. Getting the athlete ready, all the prep work that will keep them healthy while they're training, you know, a year or two leading up to the event, and then more intense training as you get closer to the Olympics themselves. And that's where a lot of the injury prevention comes into play in terms of flexibility, strength, and technique. Of course, once the games begin, then it heats up even more so. Just read an article about some physical therapists that were at the Vancouver Olympics 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And their schedule, they started at 5:36 in the morning and went to 11:30 at night or midnight, treating new injuries or just rehabbing old injuries, just trying to piece people together so they can continue to compete.
Wow.
And there are physical therapists who specialize in certain sports. For example, a friend of mine works with professional tennis. And so whenever there's a major tennis tournament, he's there. So he's working with the athletes, doing preventative stuff, helping them get warmed up and prepared before their matches. And every high-level athlete has their own routine of things that they feel like they want and need prior to a big competition. And so whether that's a certain kind of taping, whether it's a certain kind of massage, whether it's a certain kind of stretching or whatever, we're there to provide those services.
And then what about recovery afterwards for those people? I mean,
well, again, if there's an injury, certainly. But most athletes, again, have a routine for their post-event recovery, particularly if they're in a semifinals and they're going on to a finals and they're going to participate again. Then, again, if they have any injury, they're nursing along, trying to get through to the end. You do whatever kind of rehabilitation they need. Maybe they need icing. Maybe they need stretching. Maybe they need some joint mobilization or manipulation for their pelvis or their spine or something. So we provide whatever service that athlete needs. And at that stage of the game, we're really a team working with them. They know their bodies so well that for us to say, oh, you need this, really doesn't make sense at that level.
Yeah, I suppose. So does it differ a little bit or a lot between what a PT might do for an Olympic champion versus, let's say, the college athlete?
Well, it really depends upon the individual. In terms of the prevention and rehabilitation, the principles are the same. Much of it depends upon the caliber of athlete and what kind of services that athlete needs and how much they depend on the other person to provide those. So, for example, a college athlete who's new to that university, they sprain their ankle, they're going to come in, they're going to rely on that healthcare professional to help get them going. at a higher level, they may have sprained that before. They know what to do, and they just need somebody to work with them. So the relationship between the athlete and the physical therapist varies depending upon the level of the athlete and their particular own style.
Yeah. And one of the challenges of the Olympics is some of the athletes who participate in multiple events, and there's multiple heats, and so there isn't much recovery time where, you know, a lot of the athletes, you think about, you know, basketball players, you know, they play, collegiate basketball players play twice a week. So they have a few days in between, and they're not playing eight games in, or, you know, or six games in one day. So this is a very intense period for the Olympic athletes.
Yeah. Speed skaters and that, they're out there a lot.
Right. Right. And then some of the skiers are in multiple events, and there's multiple heats and ski boarders as well.
And, you know, they're used to training at a certain level and a certain intensity, and particularly for the snow sports, they're used to a certain kind of snow. They can feel that snow with their board or their ski underneath them. And when that snow is a different composition, it changes the motor program that they have existing in their head of when they feel the right speed, they feel the right edge to do their trick. And when they don't have that feel, they don't have sufficient motor program sometimes to compensate for that.
I remember one of the American athletes who fell at one of the, I think it was a snowboarding event of some sort. She went off, and when she landed, she said, "It felt like I was landing in mashed potatoes," you know? And she just not used to that feel, and down she went.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's a lot of, that's pretty interesting. It's you hate to see people injured at these events.
Oh, but, yeah. I mean, they've trained so hard and so long, and then particularly when they don't even get to compete because they've injured themselves in a training run.
Right. Yeah. And it's 4 years before the next Olympics, the next Winter Olympics again for them.
Well, Kevin in Madison, I don't think he was at the Olympics, but he has an issue. He might like to share. Kevin, hi.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I am not an elite athlete, although my profession of carpentry requires a great deal of athleticism to do it. And I have just had a rotator cuff tear operated on February 6th. You know, it was also a slap tear was fixed as well as, you know, some arthritis. I have a great surgeon, great physical therapist. Most of my calls about, you know, your comments just, you know, as far as evidence-based strategies. And I'm interested in cycling as well. So spinning is certainly something it looks like I'll be able to do. So I've been doing a lot of research on it, but with two extras like you on board, I've listened, you know, to you on the show many, many times. I'd just love to get your take on it, on what you've seen with rotator cuff, the rehab, you know, over time. And I'm fully aware of, you know, the times we're looking at here. It's very long term.
Yeah. Just a question: did you have a rotator cuff repair or just a decompression?
Oh, a repair. Yeah, complete repair. It was very seriously torn. It was a small tear initially, and then I took a spill on concrete during an ice storm, and it became a very large tear.
Okay, so it was an acute repair.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was.
Okay, and is it your dominant arm?
It is.
Oh, of course. All right. And you're a carpenter.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am.
Yeah. and last question, may I ask your age?
I'm 56.
Okay. All right. Because the older you get, the more brittle some of your tissues become, and it becomes harder and harder for that tendon to adapt to the trauma, the damage that's happened as a result of that trauma. So, well, you know, the good news is you had a good surgeon, a good physical therapist. So, you know, some of the key things are, you know, you had a slap tear, so you've lost some of the good congruency that you have between your humeral head and the joint that it sits in. So instead of having the nice, smooth, normal biomechanics, they're a little bit amiss. you have a little bit of arthritis, if it's in the glenohumeral joint, that's going to have an interplay with that slap tear, because the way your humeral head gets its nutrition is by sort of a sponge mechanism with your labrum. So those will kind of work together to you need to work those together to avoid some further osteoarthritis. And then the rotator cuff, if it's not working well, also contributes to altered biomechanics. So you really have kind of three things that are messing with your biomechanics. So the take-home message is you want to make sure when you're moving as smoothly and as normally as possible. So you're not getting a hitch or a catch, and you're not changing how you do things because you're getting some symptoms. You need to try to respect what your shoulder's telling you and progress your rehab based upon some of your symptoms. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it certainly does.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Kevin, as they work you through the strengthening, and they'll work on core strengthening, not just strengthening at the shoulder, you know, range of motion-wise, over time, it's important you have good flexibility in your mid-back and upper back. There may be some limitations at the shoulder itself based on the injury and even with the repair. And so to squeeze as much range of motion as possible, raising arm up overhead or reaching behind your back, there's some good self-mobilization, self-stretches for the mid-back, upper back, and at the base of the neck that can help the shoulder indirectly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, as I look at the machines that are available at gyms, it seems like there's, at this point, you know, I mean, within the next few weeks, probably, the only one that might make any sense for me is doing an indoor cycling, you know, on a spinning type bike. Is that something that you have seen and recommended as well, you know, in the early stages of recovery?
Yeah, absolutely. If they're letting you weight bear on your hand, then indoor cycling with gentle weight bearing does make sense, because that weight bearing can provide some nutrition to your joint and also work your rotator cuff isometrically. And you can mix that up with some recumbent bike or even a cross trainer where you don't use the arms and just hold on to the railings along your side. So the more you mix it up, the better off you're going to be, because you're going to have different kinds of loads and stresses on the joint.
Good luck, Kevin. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller, talking today with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody about injuries and what you can do about them. And when you call in, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, is there with her smiling face to answer your question, answer the call. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Now we are talking with physical therapists Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody about injuries of all type. We've zeroed in a little on the Olympics injuries, but hey, we're interested in your injury and how we can help you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Joe in Washburn, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a 64-year-old gymnast, and I pride myself in knowing how to fall, and I'm a skier, and I lift weights and do push-ups and can do 30 pull-ups, so I feel like I'm in pretty good condition for my age. But this winter, my neighbor got stuck on a hill, on a pretty substantial angled hill with a truck and a trailer, and when I stepped over the tongue of the trailer hitch with my right foot, the hill was angling down to my left, and as I stepped over and lifted my left foot up to step over the tongue on the trailer hitch, my right foot went left in front of me and leaned me over to my right-hand side, and to keep my head from hitting the trailer, I planted my forearm down on the hard surface road. And normally, you know, I know how to fall. I would have tucked my shoulder under and rolled out of it, but I just couldn't, because that sharp trailer was there. So when I planted my forearm, you know, I felt my shoulder, you know, my forearm and my shoulder just jam up into my neck. And when I got up, you know, I kind of shook it off and moved my arm around a little bit, and I just felt the numb feeling in my shoulder. Well, a few days later, you know, I was stretching it out, and you know, I know what I have to do to keep mobility in my shoulder. So I kept working it, and this has been now about a month and a half. And my shoulder feels pretty good. It doesn't ache or anything like that, except that if I take my arm and I lift straight up in front of me, if I lift my arm straight out in front of my chest over my head, I can lift it fine. But coming back down, there's a definite snap, you know, and it sounds like a tendon or something like that, an impingement of some sort. And I can lift it back up, but as I come back down and I can get just into that little spot and you can hear this little crunching sound taking place. I probably could put the phone to my shoulder and you could probably hear it.
we've heard this sound before.
Yes, I'm sure you have, and so have I, you know, and I've gotten past it, but this is a month and a half, and I'm doing things like hanging, you know, I'm hanging to keep, because I know if you get a bad rotator cuff or something and you just let your arm hang, you're in trouble. So you have to do something about it. So I'm doing the rotations and everything like that with my dumbbells, and I'm just having trouble getting past this impingement thing.
Let me ask a couple of questions. Do you feel like you have a loss of strength at all? You know, it comes down and you have this funny noise. Does it feel like you don't have any strength there?
Well, yeah, I'm not lifting a weight in front of me coming down because, you know, I just feel that would be just really too painful to
do. Okay.
All right. And then you said you're doing your rotations. Are you able to rotate out?
Yes.
Okay. With resistance?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there's a couple things. You know, what you have is what we call a kind of a classic drop arm sign that suggests that you may have torn your rotator cuff. Usually we test that by raising the arm up and then seeing if they can hold it. So, you know, when you lower it down and you get to that spot, that may be sort of that optimal length tension curve of the tendon where it's not functioning. Many people can still externally rotate against resistance, even with a torn rotator cuff. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that you tore your labrum. So when you land like that and you jam that humeral head into the socket, there's a labrum or a thick cartilage that deepens the socket and makes it congruent with the humeral head. And when you land like that, especially if you push it up into the acromioclavicular joint above it, you can tear that labrum. Again, and if you decelerated yourself quickly, your biceps tendon is going to help control that, and your biceps tendon attaches at your labrum, and it can pull off a chunk of labrum. So I'd say you're doing fantastic stuff, Joe, and I would go in and I would have someone take a look at this, because given everything you know about your body and your shoulder, if you were going to completely recover, you would have by now. So why don't you go in and have somebody take a look at it and find out what that last little click is and maybe give you some better direction on what, if anything, you should do about it.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Dennis in Brookfield a chance to join us. Dennis, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a 70-year-old active person. I have had lower back issues in the past and had minor surgery to remove a fragment that was against the sciatic nerve. However, I'm not sure if this is Arthur catching up to me, but in the morning, my back really is hurting, the lower back, and it takes a longer time for me to recover, at least a half an hour before I basically, it's on the left side, and I have trouble walking without pain.
Okay. So Dennis, how long have you had the troubles in the morning?
It just started about 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Any idea why it started? I mean, the different change in activity, a slip? Or...
Yeah. No slips. But the other thing is I've always been very aware of supporting my back for the last 6 or 7 years. 6 or 7 years ago, I really overdid it, and that's when that fragment was generated. And but since then, I wear either a Velcro belt, or I actually have like a leather weight man belt that I wear mm-hmm. when I'm going to be doing a lot of lifting.
Yeah. Okay.
So 2 weeks ago, were you doing a lot of lifting, or what do you think set you up for this?
It was about 4 weeks ago. I did a series of lifting for about 4 days off and on.
Okay.
And I did not experience any major problem. So, you know, it's possible that I threw another fragment, but it's not acting the same. You know,
okay.
Sciatic nerve fragment, man, there's nothing you can do to get rid of that pain except the injection process and then surgery.
Right. So when you wake up in the morning, does it seem to make a difference what position you're in?
No. Okay.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. And mattress, is it soft? Is it firm?
It's relatively firm.
Okay. All right. Well, there's a couple of things, and I can't say for sure, but let's assume it's also related to the lifting that you did and just a delayed response in an area that you probably have some arthritis underlying some of these symptoms. Sleeping positions, if you're on your side, it's good to have a pillow between your knees and maybe a pillow also underneath your top arm. If you're a back sleeper, having a pillow underneath your knees is just, again, softens the back, puts the back in more of a neutral position. You should probably stay off your stomach. So if you're ending up on your stomach, again, if you lie on your side of a pillow underneath that top arm, it doesn't allow you to roll all the way over flat on your stomach. So the pillows, you have some extra pillows, that can help some. Some gentle stretching before you go to bed could be helpful. And in gently working on arching your back, so not bending forward, lying on your stomach and doing a modified push-up, keeping your waist on the floor and just gently push up, arching your back. And I mean gently. Also being on your hands and knees and gently arch it back up toward the ceiling and then arch it down toward the floor. But kind of working it in the opposite direction of when we lift also could be helpful. So maybe doing some of that before you go to bed at night. And in the morning before you get out of bed, you know, squeezing your glutes together tight, kind of tightening your abdominals, and doing some of the stretching that I just mentioned before you get out of bed may help speed that process up. Generally within 4 to 6 weeks, these things tend to calm down and people recover. But if you start having more pain in your leg versus your back, or you start noticing any numbness or weakness in the legs or bile and bladder changes, then you need to go see your physician. But short of that, doing the gentle stretching and using pillows for positioning may help speed this process up for you.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Dennis. Appreciate it. And Nick in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a physical therapist nightmare, but when I was like 12 or 13, Christmas Eve actually, which is really bad, my brother and I were playing football in the house, and he pushed me and kicked the wall. And, of course, the wall didn't move. But four bones of my foot and four bones of my ankle moved and broke. And I went through therapy. I've been through therapy. They put electricity through my foot. And nothing really seems to help if I walk for like maybe an hour or two. I come home and I can't walk, and I can move. They told me to do the alphabet with my foot to strengthen it, and that doesn't really seem to help. But when I do that, it cracks. It'll crack like 5-6 times in a row. And then like at night when I go to bed, my wife and I are laying in bed, I'd be like, honey, can you shift my ankle? And she takes my ankle and she twists it a little bit, and you can hear it crack. And I mean, I've tried everything, and I don't know. I mean, I've got cortisone in there, and nothing really seems to help. And if I'm really standing out for a long time, the next day I can't walk.
So you broke how many bones?
I broke 8 bones. I knew it was bad when the X-ray technician was like, holy man.
Wow.
4 bones in my foot and 4 bones in my ankle. Okay. I didn't realize there was that many bones in the foot and ankle.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. And have those all healed?
They healed. I was told a couple of years ago I should probably have surgery, but I just never got the surgery.
Okay. Well, so how many years ago was this?
I was like 12 and I'm 41 now, so it's
Oh.
In a few years.
Okay. Yes, it has. Well, a couple of things. You break that many bones and, you know, you really focus on the broken bones because they're pretty easy to see. But if you have enough trauma to break 8 bones, you've also traumatized all the soft tissues, all the joint capsules, the ligaments, the tendons, everything that provides kind of the dynamic structure for your foot. The bones are the static structure, and then you have all these other soft tissues that provide the dynamic stability for it so that it can mold to uneven surfaces and things like that. So chances are you damaged all of those at the same time. So you probably have a tremendous amount of arthritis in your ankle. At this point, you really need to follow the advice of the people who have looked at your ankle. And you know, you can try to strengthen it. You can try to normalize mechanics by using various orthotics and so on. You maintain appropriate body weight. You do, you know, cardiovascular conditioning to maintain strength and sort of what we call peripheral aerobics, so you get good vascularity in the area. But, you know, at this point, given how long ago it was and your age, chances are you have a significant amount of arthritis in there. At the end of the day, you know, if you're having a lot of pain and you're unable to function, you may end up with a fusion of some of those bones. Because sometimes it's the motion, the excessive motion between bones because of the damage and the altered mechanics due to the multiple fractures that gives you the pain. And so you end up fusing it. And people who do that actually do pretty well in terms of the pain. But you really need medical advice for that.
Nick, you mentioned that you're doing alphabet exercises that the therapist gave you. What else have you had rehab-wise? What else has the physical therapist done with you?
She put this blue stuff on my ankle, and it put electricity through it to help with the swelling and stuff. And okay. I've got pretty much an open prescription for Vicodin, and Vicodin doesn't do anything for me.
Okay. Yeah. So have they done, again, I would agree with what Lori said in terms of probably some arthritic changes, but so did they do any aggressive stretching or mobilization or manipulation in the foot and ankle area?
They have. It didn't really seem to do a whole lot. And like I said, I can hit a crack, just a small little crack in the sidewalk, and I'll twist my ankle. It
yeah.
doesn't take nothing to twist that ankle now.
That's not unexpected, given the damage that you had at the time. And if they did recommend surgery and you didn't have it done, then I think what you're seeing is the sequelae of that. So, you know, if it's really debilitating for you, you're very young yet. You know, I'd go back to the foot and ankle specialist and ask them what you should do at this point so that you can have the best ankle for the next 20, 40 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck, Nick. Appreciate your call very much.
Yeah, it's not anything physical therapy is going to be able to solve at this stage of the game.
Robin in Madison, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me. I am a 52-year-old woman. I have dysplasia in my right hip. I'm bone on bone. No cartilage is left. Very active prior to finding this out a little over a year ago. I've been to 3 different orthopedic surgeons. They all say, you need surgery. You need a full hip replacement. I'm not a candidate for resurfacing or anything besides a full replacement. Here's my question. I work out about 6 days a week. I do a lot of core. I actually do a lot of quad, hamstring, medial glute. I do a lot of building my muscles around my right hip joint. I am not in chronic pain with my joint. I do have intermittent point that pain that I call aggravations. If I overdo, like if I walk too long, I'll be hobbling for about 6 or 7 hours till I go to sleep. I sleep fine. I wake up the next morning. Usually I'm fine on my legs again. My question is, because the components might not last my lifetime, getting with the replacement, how long does someone like me wait to do this type of surgery? I don't want to get to the point where most people are like on canes and crutches hobbling in to have their hip replaced. But I'm confused I'm functional, very functional, but not quite at the level I was prior to this hip problem. How, I mean, is there a rule of thumb that you guys would recommend?
Yeah, sort of the standard rule of thumb is when the bad days are winning, it's time to have it done.
Okay.
So it sounds at this point like the good days are winning.
Yeah.
You know, not everyone that has terrible arthritis have symptoms. So you've done a great job by maintaining your mobility, by staying active, by keeping your strength up. Those are all the things that we recommend people do. And you're a pretty good example of how if you do those things, you know, you can hold off for quite a while. So you'll, you know, what we kind of say is people will know, you know, when you're really sick of it and every day you get out of bed and you ask yourself, how bad is my hip going to hurt when I stand up? And am I going to be able to go to this event or do this activity because I don't know how my hip is going to be? When it becomes the focus of your life, then it's time to get it done. But as long as it's an occasional aggravation, you kind of go, oh, geez, you know, it's kind of like you have an occasional headache or an occasional,
right.
you know, whatever. Then it's you're not ready.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree. It comes down to not what it looks like on an X-ray or an MRI, but your function, your level of function.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Thank you. Can I ask one other quick question?
Okay.
Sure.
Do you guys have an opinion on posterior versus anterior approach to the total hip replacement?
I would go with whatever my surgeon was most skilled with and had the best outcomes with.
Yeah. And you shouldn't. And you can ask?
You can ask.
Yep, absolutely.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. There you go. Good luck, Robin. Barbara in Gotham, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call, Larry, and your people there. I'm in a really bad place right now. I had in 1988 a total problem with my right hip. They replaced it, and the left hip was done 2 years later. And then I did a knee replacement, which messed up and made my knee crooked. And no doctors will touch that. But I have already had both hips replaced, and my left knee was done nicely about 5 years ago. But I've been just trying to recuperate from 2008 and 2009 when I had this right hip redone. Two different doctors did it, two different hospitals, and it came apart. The second doctor had it coming out of the joint. And he took me back into surgery in 2008, and he gave me an infection while he was monkeying around in there. So I was in the hospital off and on and in a wheelchair for 2 years at the nursing home and the hospital. And they put my right hip out between the two doctors in 2008 and 2009. I had it out five times. And now I'm suddenly aware, the last replacement that was done in 2009 is a metal-on-metal striker joint. And now I'm having concern because I've just been able to walk for the first time last summer for like 2.5 to 3.5 hours. And I'm wondering if, oh, my God, was it wearing this joint out? Because they're telling me that flakes of metal can form from the tension in the joint and can get into your bloodstream. And I have all the side effects that they listed on this paper. And I'm just so worried if I'm going to have this thing out. They do have a recall on it. And they won't give you a satisfactory, you know, amount of money to, you know, help you because you have to have the original joint taken out to get
that. Right. Well, you know, It's something to discuss with your surgeon because your surgeon put the joint in. You've had a lot of trouble with your joints over time, and so going back in is certainly a pretty risky event for you. So, you know, if you're up and around and you're functional and you said you've been up and you're walking around and you're able to do the things you need to do, perhaps you shouldn't be worried about it. So I would say if you're up and you're functioning, you know, the metal on metal, you know, yes, there is that potential, but if you look at the potential side effects of any medication, there's a very long list of them. So it doesn't mean you're necessarily going to have those problems. So you really have to weigh the risk of going back in and redoing that and potentially going through what you did before versus the risk of metal-on-metal wear. Mm. And I guess you should have that conversation with your surgeon.
Yeah. Need to do that, Barbara. Thank you for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call very much. Ingrid in Wauwatosa, on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Here's what's happened. In May of 12, so almost 2 years ago, I had arthroscopy left knee for a medial meniscus tear. And it's never been right. And I've had one done on the right one, and so I have a point of reference. And it's never been right because it's been chronically inflamed. And last fall, after a year of my orthopedist saying, let's try the Synvisc for inflammation, I did that, and in between injections 2 and 3, I had this new, different kind of onset of pain. Now, the Synvisc did decrease, I think, the inflammation, but the new symptoms, so by the end of the month, I went and said, we're missing something. He mumbled something about IT band, and then but then said, no, I think it's actually coming from your hip. And I have a history of SI joint dysfunction. I just couldn't wrap my head around that. Went to my spine doctor who said, no, I think it's your knee. Long story short, I have an MRI that shows lateral meniscus tear. And like that lady calling before, I'm thinking, I don't want anyone to go in there anymore. Is there a point where that really will help my decrease my inflammation to do it again? Will it bring back my range of motion? Because that's what's really compromised.
So what range is compromised, straightening or bending?
Bending. And so, for example, coming out of that 90-degree bend out of a chair, I hobble. You know, I went to PT last fall. I'm really good about exercise. And what I've really done is stretching a lot, mm-hmm. but I can't get that back. So, for example, that classic dancer stretch where mm-hmm. you're stretching your quads, mm-hmm. at least the summer after my first arthroscopy, I could grab my ankle and I could at least do it. Mm-hmm. But what it feels like is there's like always wearing swimmies on my knees. That it, because of those swimmies, if you did that analogy, you can't get through a range of motion.
So does it feel like you're hitting something?
No.
Is it swollen? Mm-hmm. Feels like it's swollen.
It's swollen, and the swelling has increased again, and that's that balance of, you know, and I got away from yoga.
That's an easy question to answer. If your knee is swelling, you need to have something done, because the swelling is a sign that your knee is not tolerating whatever kind of loads are being put on it. The longer the swelling is there, it stirs up the lining of your joint. The kinds of cells that are present in a chronically swollen knee are unhealthy for your articular cartilage. You've already had a meniscectomy on the medial side. You have some damage on the lateral side. You want to maintain the health of your articular cartilage, and that swelling combined with the lack of motion are signs that your knee is not doing well. So Synvisc isn't going to fix that at this point, nor is PT. So you need to have as much range in a joint as possible so that you can perform normal movements. So if you can't bend more than 100 degrees or so, research has shown that you change how you move. You change how you get out of a chair, which you've already articulated, how you get in and out of a car, how you get up and down off the floor. That loads your hip. You already have an SI joint problem. It loads your spine. You've already seen the spine physician. So the fact that your knee is still swollen and it doesn't bend all the way, to me, are two of the biggest red flags that you need to have something done.
Yeah, and the other thing with the swelling or edema is there's no way the muscles are functioning normally around that knee because of the edema. It changes the reflexes and the timing of how muscles work. So you're losing some of your protection that the muscles normally would be giving you to.
Yeah, so
right, those muscles help offload your joint. So then you get caught up in a really vicious cycle.
Good luck. On the Synvisc, just an aside comment, sometimes it works really well. I was thinking about it this weekend as I was doing a 5-mile jog around the neighborhood, and there is no way I would have been able to do that without the Synvisc shots that I got last summer, which, I mean, just made a whole difference in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. It took a shot or two, correct, if I remember right?
Like three shots. And then it took about 8 or 10 weeks for it to take hold.
Yeah.
Because I was that close to having the surgery because it just wasn't working. And then it started feeling better and...
Yeah.
No, it's a miracle.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it's, I mean, again, the right indications for that, Synvisc can be great, but Ingrid has had those done and her knee is getting worse.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I understand her hesitation. She's gone through this once already and was hoping things were going to be fixed. And they're not. It's very frustrating.
Thanks again for calling, Ingrid. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests today, physical therapy with the University of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues. And certainly if you have an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain, I'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I have an email from Stacy who said, my hamstring on the inner thigh side had been bothering me for a few weeks, not enough to keep me from exercising. This weekend, it progressively has gotten worse, though I never heard the popping sound often attributed to a strain or a pull. Should I be icing and resting or heating or stretching? What about massaging out the knot? I'm hoping to continue with cardio exercise.
Well, you know, there's questions that Stacy needs to kind of figure out. I mean, one of it is, was there any kind of injury that started it off? Anytime you're having hamstring pain that's not resolving, we worry that it's actually coming from your spine or elsewhere above your hamstring. So there's things that can refer to the back of the thigh. So the first thing is you want to make sure that it really is a hamstring injury, you know, because most muscle injuries will get better on their own. And hers clearly is not. So why is it? Is it the wrong diagnosis or is she doing something wrong in her regular exercise routine? There could be something in her regular exercise that is perpetuating the problem. So part of the solution is to figure out why it hasn't gotten better. I presume because she is a regular exerciser that she's been doing things like stretching and so on. In terms of the popping, you don't always hear a pop with a hamstring. If you hear a pop with a hamstring, you worry that you've actually avulsed or pulled off a piece of your hamstring with a piece of bone from your ischial tuberosity. So most hamstring strains are you just feel that pull. So I wouldn't worry about the popping. Usually heating and stretching at this point, if it is really a hamstring, if it's a sciatica coming from your back, stretching could make it worse, which is why if it's not getting better and it's actually gotten worse over the weekend, she should go in and have it looked at. It sounds like Stacy's an active person who likes to exercise, and this will continue to slow her down. So going in and seeing a physical therapist for a visit or two to sort out, is it really a hamstring and what are you doing that's keeping it from getting better, and here's what you need to get back on track, would be useful.
There we go. Lynn and Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. On Saturday, my husband and I participated in what was for us an Olympic event, and that was Book Across the Bay, the 10K walk across Lake Superior from Bayfield to Washington.
Yeah.
And we participated on snowshoes. Shorter running snowshoes. We had a blast, and we just wonder about the biomechanics of snowshoeing with the shorter snowshoes. And we want to finish in the top 10 next year. So we wonder what we might do to better our time and to prevent injuries.
Well, snowshoes are a great activity. You know, the big thing that's different. And you said you were running.
Well, we walk fast.
Okay, you walk fast. Okay. All right. So depending upon the depth of the snow, that one of the really big differences is how high you lift your knee. I mean, if there's deep snow, you have to do a lot of lifting. So it requires a lot of strength in the front of your hips and your abdomen and core muscles to do the repetitive lifting. And then, you know, when you're landing, you're usually landing in the soft snow, so there's not a huge impact issue. But one of the things you think about with any repetitive activity is there any impact that's going to bother your joints? So I would say, you know, in terms of your training, to do a lot of quad, thigh, gluteal strengthening, because when you put your foot down, you're going to use your glutes to propel yourself forward. So working a lot on your core.
Right.
That's going to be the big thing.
I might mention, too, that my husband has had meniscus surgery, and he has no pain with the shorter snowshoes.
Yeah.
So
we
would recommend it.
Yeah.
I know it's catching on, and it's a great sport. They're
super. I love them.
You get a great workout.
Yeah. My son took out my snowshoes last weekend for the first time, and he was surprised at how hard it is. So
It's
work. It's great stuff. So good for you and your husband.
And good luck. Thanks a lot, Lynn, for calling. And Gloria in Lancaster, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. This is great. I'd love to hear the physical therapist that you have on the air. I have had a torn meniscus in July, and I was at a conference, and I kind of ignored it. Ended up with a Baker cyst behind my knee. I found it with an ultrasound, and I did all the right things, kept it elevated, put the ice on it, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. I had physical therapy on my knee, and I just was wondering what I could do for maintenance. And then the second thing I have is a finger that, for all of a sudden just started hurting, at the bottom of it was my right hand on the left. Oh, and I am 64 years old. It just started hurting. It's like I jammed my one finger. I don't know, if it's age, if it's arthritis or what it is, but, I was wondering what I could do for maintenance on that and maintenance on my, knee.
All right. Well, I'll start with the knee. Strengthening your quads and your core are big things, because every time you take a step, every time your heel hits the ground, there's kind of a shock that goes up through your entire leg, up to your back. And your meniscus one of its jobs is to help transmit that force across your joint. So if your meniscus is torn or worn out, it's not doing as efficient a job as you would like it to do. So it can put more load on your joint surfaces and cause more wear and tear arthritis. So the key is to use your muscles for shock absorption rather than relying on your meniscus or your joint surface. So that really requires having strong quadriceps muscles and strong hip and gluteal muscles so that those muscles can be effective shock absorbers. Keeping your weight down, because every pound of body weight is 2 to 3 pounds across your knee joint, especially when you're walking or if you increase the speed of walking, it's a lot of load on your joints. Wearing good supportive shoes with shock absorption will also help decrease those loads across your knee. So those are some of the big things you should do to maintain the health of your knee.
Mm-hmm. Gloria, did the physical therapist give you any balance exercises?
I don't think so. I don't know what balance exercises are.
Standing on one leg, eyes open, eyes closed, standing on a pillow. Well, with the strengthening, working on balance, I mean, that would go along with some of the core strengthening as well, but balance is also important for the timing of the muscles kicking in. So, you know, standing someplace where you can grab onto a chair or a countertop to support yourself, but standing on that leg with your eyes closed, and if you can do that for 20, 25 seconds and you're pretty rock solid, then I would stand on a pillow, you know, a softer, uneven surface. Again, starting with eyes open, when that gets easy, then close your eyes, are also good ways to help prevent an injury along with the strengthening.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Listener Brian in La Crosse wondered about the pros and cons of, we were talking about Synvisc earlier, one shot versus a series of three. I had the series of three. I didn't even know there was an opportunity to do it all in one.
Well, typically they do a series of three. So there's less information on doing just one. So, you know, I would say in general, if you do one and your symptoms are cleared up, then you probably don't need to have two more. But most people, it requires a series of three before their symptoms resolve. At least that's what most of the research has shown. And just backing up for a second on Gloria, she had a question on her finger.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not sure which finger it was. If it's the base of your thumb, that's a very common place to get arthritis. She said she didn't know if she jammed it or what. You would remember if you jammed your finger. But if she's having some symptoms in her fingers, you know, putting her hands in warm water, squeezing a sponge, doing things like that to maintain the strength and mobility of her joints would be really important.
Yeah. Is there something that you can, there's a wax?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, paraffin baths. Oh, those are
so good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can buy those now yourselves, and you melt the hot wax and you dip your hand in and let that dry. And you do that about, what is it, about five times or so, Bill? And then usually wrap it in a towel.
So nice.
Yeah. Oh, they're wonderful.
Yeah. So you might think about that, Gloria. Something to consider. Thanks a lot for your call. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne-Brody, our physical therapists, are going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. You can call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org. And you can post on my Facebook page. To do that, just go to the Larry Mueller Show. It's the Larry Mueller Show. And while you're there, click like, and when you do that, we will send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Back with our guests right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Well, whether it's an old injury that you just can't seem to fully recover from, or maybe it's a new twinge that's made an appearance, you may be dealing with some aches and pains. A lot of us are, and it can be hard to know just what's an annoyance that will eventually go away and what needs more medical attention. Larry Mueller here. Great to have with me today Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault, who are physical therapists extraordinaire, and they come by once a month to talk with us about those aches and pains and how to deal with them. If you have a question, I hope you'll join us. You can email us at talk@WPR.org, post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or phone at 1-800-642-1234. We would love to hear from you. Steve in Madison's been waiting a long time on lines on the phone, so let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Yes, I'm actually calling for my wife. She's 72 years old and will probably need shoulder replacement, and I'm going to be the caregiver. We've talked to the surgeon and things. I'm just wondering if you can walk me through the first couple of months. I know that being in the hospital a few days, and then what happens?
Mm-hmm. Well, typically they come home if they have someone like you to help care for them. So she will likely be doing a little bit of exercise at the beginning, but not much. It's mostly going to be pain control, making sure her elbow and wrist and hand stay mobile and flexible. Typically, they bend the elbow and immobilize the shoulder, and so the elbow can get stiff. So some of it is coming out of there and doing the range of motion. For you, some of the key issues will be helping her with bathing and dressing and things like that, because she's going to need help with all those things. Eventually, within, you know, they'll have a follow-up with the surgeon, usually within a week or two after the surgery, depending upon stitches and things like that. And then they will gradually progress range of motion, and they will limit the range that she can work in a graduated fashion. So for a certain number of weeks, she'll she'll be able to have her shoulder moved passively. That means by you forward to a certain point, and her hand rotate in and back to neutral, but you can't rotate out, and you can't lift away from the side of the body for a certain distance, and so on. And you will, you should visit with a physical therapist on a periodic basis who will walk you through the next phase of the rehabilitation program and show you exactly what things she should do and what things she shouldn't do. But, you know, after the surgery, when she comes home, you know, she'll be in some pain, but she's mostly going to need you to help with, you know, dressing, cooking, laundry, things like that. And other than that, she should be relatively self-sufficient.
What, so the arm is pretty much in a sling for a couple
yeah,
months?
Yeah, it's in a type of a brace. Not just a sling by the side, but usually in a brace that limits their range of motion so they don't move too far, usually too far out, because they want the soft tissues to heal in place. You know, your shoulder joint is pretty much like a golf ball sitting on a tee. It's inherently unstable. So they want to make sure that all the soft tissues around it heal so that it stays stable and her shoulder isn't slipping out of place all the time. So they're pretty restrictive about the range you can go through to make sure that they get good post-operative healing. So, yeah, she'll be in a sling.
There you go.
Steve, has the surgery been scheduled yet?
That
is the surgery scheduled?
Not yet.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, once that happens, your wife will have a preoperative visit that that you should also attend. And, you know, what you're asking is a great question. But make sure at this preoperative visit that not only are your questions answered about the surgery itself and while she's in the hospital, but exactly the same thing what you're asking us. And if it's possible to have a preoperative visit with a physical therapist, then they can take both of you through some of the exercises early on, just so you're better prepared. You know, a lot of times with the preoperative visits, the focus is on the surgery itself, and people are pretty much blinded by what happens after the surgery. They wake up and they go home and are not quite sure what to expect. So, you know, kind of generate a list of questions that you take in for this preoperative visit can be really helpful.
Yeah.
And Bill makes a really good point about a pre-op visit with a PT, because it's much easier to go through the exercises and physically do them. That way, after surgery, you kind of have an idea of what it feels like to do them. Yeah. And it'll be much easier than when she's in pain and so on.
That's a great idea. Very good idea. Yep. Good luck, Steve. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let us know how it turns out.
Yeah.
Marcia in Franklin. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm 61, and I've had three hip replacements. I had the left one in 98, the right one in 03, and I just had the left one revised October 30th of this past year.
Okay.
The doctor said it was one of the worst hips he's ever seen, because I really ran it into the ground. And he had to insert, he said I was the only patient he's ever had to do this to, something called an augmenter, which is like a little wedge to stabilize the hip. And my question is, you know, I was inpatient physical therapy for 3 weeks, and then I came home and I had it in the home for a month. And now I'm back to outpatient physical therapy, and I'm still having that, you know, that chronic groin, you know, classic hip pain.
Yep.
I'm wondering if, you know, I can expect this forever, or, you know, I'm still limping, I'm still using a cane, and I've never done that in the past.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, it's, this is your second time around, so there's that. And he said it was one of the worst hips he's seen. So, you know, to have still have some groin pain is probably not unexpected. Are you doing like a regular home exercise program?
I'm retired from the Navy, so I'm doing a, they call it, I think, a joint group 3 times a week at the VA.
Okay.
And that seems to have really helped.
Okay.
You know, they have me on sort of kind of a bite. And then doing, if you've ever done ballet, kind of like ballet plies, you know, sort of a squat. And,
okay.
You know, I think somebody that mentioned the balancing.
Are there any Are there any particular exercises you do that reproduce your groin pain?
You know, walking, just walking.
Okay.
You know, I don't work any longer. So,
okay.
Just, you know, when I go out and about, you know, doing errands, yeah. You know.
Yeah, sure.
So have you tried walking in a pool?
No.
You might think about that. That may help help you to increase your walking tolerance, to walk in a reduced gravity environment for a while and see if you can build your hip up a little bit for that specific activity. So, you know, it's good to do all the things that you're doing and the strengthening and the balance and so on. Those are fantastic. Since the thing you're still having trouble with is walking, you know, think about walking in a reduced gravity environment and see if training in that environment can help build you up to transition to a gravity environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Marcia, when's the last time you saw the surgeon?
Just the middle of December.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking of actually calling his office.
Yeah, and then I just wonder what they told you in terms of time frame. I mean, I'm sure you're sick of this, and it's been probably...
Well, you know what? When I saw him, I was just so happy. He said I could give up the walker. Yeah. You know, that was, like, too joyful to even ask.
Right. Well, maybe, you know...
I just booked it.
Yeah, when you go back, I would just ask, maybe you're right on schedule based on what the surgeon had to do and what they saw inside that joint, or... you know, it's hard to say, are you behind or ahead of schedule? You have reasons to be hurting to a degree based on your history here, but, you know, kind of checking in and asking, you know, is this expected 5 months out, and what to expect over the next couple of months as well?
See, now, based on something Lori was talking to me about earlier, you mentioned you have a cane.
Oh, yes.
What hand do you hold the cane in?
I hold the cane in the right hand.
And which hip?
It's your left hip.
And it's your left hip? Okay. Very good. Perfect. Well, thank you for being the good role model for that. So for all those listeners, if you're using one cane or one crutch, it goes in the opposite hand of the injured leg or limb.
And Lori has actually stopped people on the street and told them they were using...
The cane police.
The cane police, that's right. Oh, geez.
Told them they were using the cane in the wrong hand.
Yeah. But
and
it works.
They turned around and said, thank you. Yeah. It feels better.
Most people do. So
right.
Good luck with that,
thank
Marcia.
You. Thanks, Marcia. Jean in Oshkosh, hello. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon. Are you hearing me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On May 15th, I started to get a pain in my left hip. And I thought first maybe it was requiring a hip replacement. I went to see my orthopedic surgeon, and he said, no hip replacement. There's no bursitis. And recommended I go to a pain specialist. So I did, and ultrasound was ordered, and after an office consultation, some injections into the lumbar region were performed. And at the follow-up, I didn't have any relief from the pain. And they said, well, we can do some more shots, but I said, is there anything else I could do instead? And so they recommended physical therapy. So I went to physical therapy for 3 months, and they did electrostimulation and deep heat and exercises, and they think it's iliotibial band problems and inflammation. And I can't take any anti-inflammatories because I take Coumadin. And since I finished physical therapy and October, I've been still doing the water exercises that the physical therapist gave me, and I swim 3 times a week and do some lie-down bicycling stuff.
The recumbent.
Recumbent bike. Yep.
Right, the recumbent bike, thanks. So that's where I'm at the time right now, and I thought that things were getting better during the physical therapy, but reached a plateau. And right now I'm still having pain from from my hip down the left side of my left leg down to the knee.
Hmm. Okay.
So the physical therapist, did they look at your back as well? Or was it all focused at the hip, Gene?
Everything was focused at the hip and on the outside of the left leg.
Okay, and all your injections were in the low back area?
Right.
Okay.
There were two injections.
All right. And the injections, they did not help at all?
No.
Okay. All right. Yeah, the pain outside the leg, I mean, obvious structure is the IT band. You can have pain in the area also associated with the low back area as well. Most likely, if it was low back, the injections would have changed due to some degree, and the fact they made no difference makes us look more at the hip. Are you still doing any of the stretching or strengthening that the physical therapist gave you, besides what you're doing in the pool and the bike?
What I'm doing is walking in the pool and doing some leg circles and I crouch down and do the regular thing that you do in the pool.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the questions that comes to mind is, why do you have it on one side and not the other? Have they looked at things like leg length or?
I was wondering about that. I've had both knees replaced. The right leg was replaced back in 88, and so I have a significant bowing of the right leg. And so I wouldn't be surprised that there's a leg differential. And I do put a small support in my shoe. It's a lift, but that hasn't changed anything. Maybe it's not enough.
That's possible. It could be worn down at this point.
Okay.
So does it, when you poke around on the outside of your hip, does it hurt to touch, you know, on that band down the outside of your thigh?
No, it doesn't. What it feels like is like a bruise feels when you need it, is what I basically, and that sort of feels good when I need that band.
Okay.
And I've used hot and cold compresses, and that seems, it makes it feel good. I don't know whether it's doing any good.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, some of it could have to do with the biomechanics of your knee. You know, if you're pretty bowed-legged, it could be a leg length difference. And doing that deep tissue massage would probably be the way to go if you're, like, rolling on a foam roller or something like that to help do some releases for the iliotibial band. But, yeah, I agree with Bill. It's probably not coming from your back if the injections in your back didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I kind of come back to the question of why you're having it on one side and trying to figure that piece out. So you might try putting a little more lift on that side. If you've been wearing it for a while, it could be worn down, and that may be why you're having some symptoms.
Worth a try.
Yeah.
Give it a shot. Thanks a lot for calling. We had an email from Jane who said, as a person who spent many, many years of her life in chronic pain trying to get to the bottom of it, I'm wondering why having a parasitabular osteotomy, I believe is how it's pronounced, is not a more offered solution for women under 45 or 50 who have dysplasia and are in pain. I went to 9 or 10 different specialists over the course of a couple of years, and only one apparently was aware of this surgery. I think it's worth mentioning on the program. And I have no idea. Parasitabular osteotomy, is that correct pronunciation?
Well, yeah, periacetabular osteotomy. Yeah. So, peri means around, acetabular is the socket, the acetabulum that the femoral head fits in. And an osteotomy, it sounds like they're changing the angle of the thigh bone. So I have not heard of that as a routine surgery for hip dysplasia.
Yeah, I'm not either. I'm not aware.
Yeah.
All right. So one we can't really comment on.
Yeah.
Nikki and...
But I'll look it up, and next time I'll investigate it a little bit, and we'll talk more about it last time. So thank you, Jane, for bringing that topic up.
And Nikki in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So I played roller derby for about 5 years, and... I had to quit because my knees were killing me.
Yeah.
It's been 2 years since I've played. I have found out that both my knees had tendonitis, probably more like tendinosis. My right knee, actually, the tendon is starting to split, or at least it was. So I gave 2 years off of doing absolutely no exercising, trying to just rest it up. I'm finally getting to a point where I actually have a day or two where I won't have any pain. But I'm still, you know, definitely feeling the effects. And I was just wondering if I'm going to just have to live with this for the rest of my life, or is there something I should be looking into doing?
Well, apparently you've seen some people in the healthcare who have made this diagnosis, or you talk about your tendon splitting. You're talking about your quadriceps tendon?
I'm not sure. It's the one that goes right across the top, I guess. Yeah, I did go see a physical therapist actually for another past injury that they'd have no idea what really happened. But they did a couple MRIs just to see on both knees how things are. And, yeah, they came up with this diagnosis.
Okay. And what did they recommend?
Well, they were giving me some exercises that basically inflame things even worse.
Okay.
So then they said, at that point, there was ice, you know, right after practices and things like that. And now it's heat.
Okay.
But
you're not rolling anymore. But you're not rolling anymore. Okay. So
no,
this was
I'm
a
not.
Couple. This was a couple years ago when they gave you that advice. So
exactly.
So your knees are in a different place right now. So this would be a time when you're having a couple good days where you're not having pain. This would be the time to go in and say, okay, I've got it calmed down. It's not inflamed. It's not sore. I can function most of the time. Now what do I do? And some of the things they gave you a couple years ago may have been inappropriate at the time you were still skating and your knees were inflamed. But now that you're not and you've had this couple year rest interval, now it's time to go back and revisit that question and see what you should do. So given kind of the complexity of your problem, you really need some good guidance on how to get back to activity.
Yeah.
And getting back to activity will be important.
Yeah, and Nikki.
Yeah, I'd love to work out again.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. And you know, they would reevaluate your knees, but they would also look at your ankle and your ankles and feet, biomechanics, the leg length. You know, anything to do to decrease the stress at the knees. But I would think there must be some things that are safe for your knees to do to get you back exercising again at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Eva in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I just wanted to know what the success rate is for the femoacetabular impingement repair and a labral repair, and I wanted to tell the IT band gentleman that my trick is that I use a rolling pin on it.
Mm. Ah, there you go.
Yep. Now, can you do that yourself, or do you need someone else to do it for you?
I can do it myself.
Oh, very good. Very good. Yeah. Okay. Yep. A rolling pin. So femoral acetabular impingement is an entity in the hip where as you move the hip through the range of motion, you get an impingement. For women, it's usually in the front of the hip. So you'll come up in front and you'll feel a pinching sensation. And it's usually due to the femur hitting the front of the acetabulum and the labrum there. And so as a result, you can get a labral tear where you get this, it's called CAM impingement syndrome. So success rate is good. You go in and you take off the bony area where the impingement is occurring and you repair the labrum, you trim it up and and if you follow rehab, you'll be in pretty good shape.
And there you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Lori and Bill, the time flew. Thank you so much. We had lots of interesting questions today. A little different.
Yeah.
A lot of
hip stuff. Yeah,
a lot of knee stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
As well.
Yep.
No, good calls, as
yeah.
usual.
Excellent.
We'll do it all over
Great
again
callers.
In a month.
Yep.
Lori Tynebrody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, and Bill Boisenault, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and a senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinics. They'll be back in a month or so, and we'll do this all over again. Tomorrow we'll talk about how to thrive during the winter rather than just sitting there and vegetating. Stay with us.